So we are in Perigimel. We learned yesterday the Malbim. Let's move forward. Maybe we'll come back. Maybe we'll come back to Rabbeinu Bechaye and Grub. But right now let's cover some ground. So we are in Perigdat. We are in Perigimel. We went through these two psukim. We're up to Pasuk Vav. Okay, we're up to Pasuk Vav. We did pretty much Pasuk Dalid and Hey, and now we come to Pasuk Vav Vayiga Hadavar El Melech Ninveh. Now, after Yonah walked through the city for one day, and he warned the people that in 40 days the city's nepeches will be overturned, the people themselves, they believed in the words in the Beloi Kim. They whatever that means exactly, they acknowledged that the city will be destroyed, and they prayed. They called for prayer. They put on sackcloth. Migdolam viat kitanam. Pasuk vav. Vayiga hadavar el melech Ninveh. I guess the king read the papers and he saw that in the papers there was a day of fasting. People wearing sackcloth, and he asked what's going on. And when they told him what happened, vayokem mikisoi. He got up from his throne. Vayaver adarto me olav. He removed his royal garment. Adarto means his royal garment, me olav. Vayichasak, he put on sackcloth. Vayeshev al ho'efer, and he sat on ash. Let's read another pasuk. Vayazek, he cried out. Vayoimer bin Ninveh. And he said, in the city of Ninveh, he issued a proclamation. Mita'am hamelech u'gidoylov leimar. That's a very unusual word. The word mita'am. The exact translation, you look over here in the Mitzvah Sili, it says, Inyan Eitza Hanemra Bitam. An advice that is given with sound logic. So they spoke, Mitam Hamelech Ugudai Love Leymar. Mitam means with reasoning. Okay, the Mitzvah Sili here is there's a very unusual word. Mitam, their expression, Mitam Hamelech Ugudai Love Leymar, Ha'adav Abheima. What was the message? Man, animal, habokar v'hatzayin. So notice we have over here, even though it says the word behema, we're breaking down behema into bokar v'hatzayin. Al yit amu mi'uma, should not taste anything. The an al yiru, they should not graze. Umayim al yishtu, and they should not drink water. Now what's very interesting is, I was preparing. I have a very good sefer on sefer Yonah, and he says something I never ever heard before. He cites Rishonim that are of the opinion. You're not going to believe this. This is so shocking. You're not even want to repeat such a thing in a shir. He cites opinions that hold the only time when you fast you're not allowed to eat anything is on Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur is v'inisem es nafshay seichem. But on a regular fast day. It's shocking. So you know, you didn't hear this from me. Okay? On a regular fast day, I left it at home. On a regular fast day, he cites opinions that hold that when Chazal made a fast, it doesn't mean you can't eat anything. You can have a cup of coffee. You can have a cup of coffee on a fast day. It just means you don't have a regular meal. You're not allowed to have regular meals. Snacks. You can have, For Yom Kippur, this is heresy. Yom Kippur is the din v'inisem esnaf shoy seichem, which means there's nothing to discuss. You cannot be toyim. But on the rabbinic fast days, or who says the rabbinic? It's divrei neviim. The four fast days originated not out of the words of Chazal. They came from the prophets. Today, we observe them as a minig avosenu biyodenu, but they originated from the Nevi'im. So maybe the Nevi'im, maybe then also it was forbidden to taste. But it's there is such an opinion that says that on the fast days, the prohibition is only to eat a significant amount of food. Now, what that means exactly, I don't know. Does it mean a kazai? You can't have a kazais, but you have less than a kazais? You can have a little sip of coffee? That would go a long way for many people, including myself, just have a little te'ima. And one of the proofs to this principle is this pasuk right here. Because it already says that the people already accepted upon themselves a fast day. It says in the previous pasuk, it says in pasuk hey, vayaminu anshei Nineveh belukim vayikru tzoim. They called for fasting. So they were already fasting. So now what is the Melech of Nineveh coming to add that they are not already doing? So the explanation is, when there's a calling for fasting, all that means is the restaurants are closed, and there are no gourmet meals, and maybe you're not allowed to eat a kezayis. Kezayis is very, very small, but you can have a little sip of coffee, a little te'ima, a little teeny piece of a food, put something in your mouth to give you a little energy so you have koyach to daven, to learn, to get so you just don't enjoy yourself. The king declared, Al Yit'amu Me'uma. He expanded the scope of the tzoim. Okay, it's very convincing. It's very, what he's saying over here is a very powerful idea. Are you going to tell, but you'll give me an answer that when it comes to the goyim, so their concept of fasting is not liked by a Jew. You find this very common. You deal with real non-from people, and it comes to Yom Kippur, you'll hear these very strange things. Or we only begin our fast in the morning. Or we drink. We can't be dehydrated, so we just don't eat, but we drink. Or we end our fast, you know, half day. You'll hear these very bizarre, if you work with non-religious Jews who consider themselves to be traditional, you know, it's Rachmanis, a Tinek Shenishba, they don't know from better, so they come up with it anyway, they're not observant, so you know, they feel guilty. Yom Kippur, their grandparents used to observe in Jews, they know from nothing, so they make up these all these chidushim that on Yom Kippur you can drink, on Yom Kippur you can begin the fast at night, all these things. So you'll tell me, oh, that since this pasuk here discussing the Goyim, Nineveh, so their translation of the word tsoim is not the way the Nevi'im said, the tsoim harvi, the tsoim hachamishi, the tsoim hashavi, or yeah, the four tsoimas, the same exact word tsoim. Okay, you could make such an argument, but it's very weak. So it's like the argument with Yoim Huledes es Paro. Don't bring me a raya from a goy. Okay, don't bring me a raya that the something called the birthday, because the birthday was the girl was Paro. Okay, so it's divided. Some say if the Torah mentions it, even though it's mentioned by a goy, if it's mentioned, perhaps there is indeed some significance. Okay? By the way, the only real for sure really Yoitzim and Aklal is a 2-year-old birthday party. Okay, that's the Ferish Pasuk. Vayas Avraham Mishte Biyoim Higomel Es Yitzchak. Now, even though you'll say Higomel, the Mamori Chazal, that it means the Bris Milah, or it means the Bar Mitzvah, or it means whatever you want, the Upshar, whatever you want to say, but the Pshutoi Shel Mikra is that Avraham made a birthday party for Yitzchak when he was 2 years old. I went recently to a birthday party for a 2-year-old girl. Someone has a girl, 2-year-old girl, and my neighbor, and he didn't even invite me, that's the truth, but I knew he was making one, so I crashed for 5 minutes to wish Mazel Tov, and I told him, this is the only real birthday party that is authorized in the Torah. Vayas Avraham Mishteh Godol, Biyoim Higomel Es Yitzchak, the day when he weaned Yitzchak. Chazal say weaning is 2 years old. In ancient times, a mother would nurse her child until the age of two. Okay, there was no formula. There was no, all the things that we have today did not exist. And therefore, that was standard. 2 years. 2 years. And then the child becomes independent. And it's a celebration. So you see, the Torah does give legitimacy to a 2-year-old birthday party. What about other birthday parties? So then you go to Paro. Yoim Huledes Es Paro.
The Malbim, by the way, says that it's not a birthday party.
His wife gave birth to a child. Okay. Or some say it was the anniversary of his Malchus.
It was the day when
Some say it was the day when he became king. It was the day, the anniversary of his ascent to Malchus, who led us as Paro, not his birthday, but he became the Malchus. Whatever it means, okay. I am Panim L'Torah. So you'll make, if you will learn that it refers to a birthday party, so then there is the old debate. This goes back from before Maaseh Bereishis. that if it says something in the Torah about a guy, does that have significance by us? Some say yes, some say no. So you can say the same argument here. It says here in the Pasuk that there is a tzoim, and it says that the king expanded the scope of the tzoim by declaring that no one should taste anything, don't put anything in your mouth, which indicates that until this point in time, the tzoim did not include a te'ima. The tzoim was just no gourmet meals, no state dinners. But you want to have a little taste? You can have a taste. No. So does that have relevance for us when it says in the Nevi'im that the Nevi'im, they
but
declared...
The Navi that's saying it. He's recording what they did. So I would say if the Navi's recording it, he wants us to learn from it.
Okay, that's one side
that's
of the coin. That's one...
Things that we
also, they were incorporated, right?
Bilam
exactly. Every wedding, you say to the kala, "Achay seinu at hayil alfei rivavon." Who's the one who said that? The worst person in the world. Lavan arami oivei ravi. We curse him every Pesach. Bikesh lavan laakar esakol. And hereby under the chuppah, all of a sudden, Lavan's a tzadikol. Here we go. Achay seinu at hayil alfei rivavon. My high. Oh, that's right. Malei Shavuos Ois. Yeah, that's right. And not only that, we learn out the halacha. We always say this. You don't say miksas hayayim kikuloi. How come you're allowed to make a sheva brachos on the last day until the very, very last moment? Why is it not a bracha levatala? So we say, why don't we apply the principle of miksas hayayim kikuloi? The answer is Malei Shavuos Ois. Malei means... We don't say miksas hayoyim kekulei when it comes to sheva brachas. Who taught us this principle? Lavan. So you see, Lavan is a very complicated person. Mitzad echad we mamish kursim. Arami oyved avi. And mitzad sheni, every wedding, that's the highlight of a person's life. Achay seinu at hayil alfei rivava. Those are the words that were composed by none other than Lavan. How do you explain this? So here also, y'all over here are tzoyim, and this is said by Ninveh. So that's the question: is this coming to teach us? Is this coming to teach us that this is the word? It's legitimate. A tzoyim. That's the way the word is used by the goyim is the way we should use it by us, and that would result in an awesome chiddush that we've never heard before. That on the Dalit Soymos, including Tisha B'Av, you could have a cup of coffee. Oh, not a whole cup, less than a revius. We've never heard such a thing. And you didn't hear it from me, that's for sure. Okay, but isn't that what it says over here in this Pasuk? But again, Yom Kippur, I saw in that Sefer, Chas V'Sholem to say such a thing, because Yom Kippur is a different din, the Nisan. So let's not get confused. Halacha is very confusing. I'll give you another example. I once spent some time with someone learning the sugya of a lefty. In Itur Yad, can a kohen do avoida with his left hand? Every mitzvah, left hand. So then you'll right away talk about tefillin. Oh, tefillin. Tefillin is in a league by itself for one very simple reason. It says in the pasuk yod cho, with a hay, Yod Keha, your weaker hand. So anything that is taught by tefillin is irrelevant for Kol HaTorah Kula, because it has its own set of rules. The tefillin shel yad must be put on your weaker hand. It's not a question of your right or your left. The Torah explicitly says weaker. So every area in halach, you have to be very careful. You have to know it's all. Depends upon the context of where it's found. But this is something you cannot ignore, that first there was a tzoyim, and then he expanded the scope by telling people they may not taste anything. Al yit'amu mi'uma, al yiru. Now the Tamei HaMikra here is very bizarre. It's an independent expression. It's very, very rare to have something like this. To have is a zokef, to have a Zokef Koton, two dots, just stand independently. You ever have Rabbi Rayevsky ever have such a thing? Or is it now scanning Kol Torah Kula
in
his mind?
No, no, no. Yeah,
he's scanning. It's extremely rare. Me'uma al yiru. What does that mean? Al yiru normally means to graze. Human beings don't graze. Human beings, they sit down at a table and they eat. The word yiru is not something you'd expect to be written by a person. So we have to say, I guess we have to say that we're going back over here on the animals. Even though it says over here, Ha'adam. Okay, Baruch Atah Adonai Elohim Melech Olam Shakol Niyah Bidvaroi. There it's a pashta. Most of the times that you have
we have this argument.
L'chori, you're right. It's a kadma munach zokhev kol. You're right, right. Because then it will be at the end. You have to have the other sign at the end, right? You're right. I never thought about that. Right, it's true. Okay, so that's a kadma, a zokhev kotoin. Okay, and then sometimes you have even chiluk deo. It's not really a kadma. Sometimes it's a munach. I found that a few times that sometimes when you have the kadma and the zakef katon in the tikkun simonim, it has it as a munach in one word, a munach.
I have one ticket that has
all the unique things. So that totally changes it. That totally changes the equation. When it's going to be a munach versus the kadma. But this is something which is totally off the charts. We have just an independent word with the tamei amir of al yiru. Umayim al yishtu, they should not drink. So the words over here in the pasuk are a little bit bizarre because it mentioned over here Adam, Behema, Bakar, Vitzayin. There's a lot of redundancy, or it's verbose. Once we say the word Behema, how is Bakar Vitzayin different than Behema? Are you going to suggest that we're referring to Chayos? Normally it's the other way around. Normally we don't the Chaya. Is a chaya included in a behema? Yes and no. I don't know. It depends on the context. But here it's a little bit bizarre. Adam a behema, and then it specifies habakar v'hatzayin al yit amu mi'uma. Do not taste. That's an expression you would expect to find by a person. Al yiru is an expression we use by animals, and then umayim al yishtu l'chor. That's referring to a person. Animals drinking. Vigam hagmalim, ashka, I will give to drink. All right, so you do find the word drinking. The yirus, right? That's the word that's usually found. That's usually found by. Let's just do these two psukim at a time. Let's go back to pasuk vav. Pasuk Vav in the Mitzudos David on page 433. Vayiga hadavar hashmua higia leozne hamelach. Vekami kisoy losheves al aritz. He rose from his throne. Vehavir me'alav levush malchus. And this is one of my, what is it called? A pet peeve? Is that the expression of pet peeve?
Yeah.
That the word kisei is a word that is, we abuse this term. In modern Hebrew, how do you say a chair? How do you say a chair in modern Hebrew? Any Israelis here? A kisei? That's how it's said in modern Hebrew. So I have an issue with that. Who am I to go up against modern Hebrew? The word kisei does not mean a chair. And in Hebrew, biblical Hebrew, as far as I know, I have to see right, a moshav. A chair in biblical Hebrew is a moshav. The word kisei is a reserved word for a throne. The average fellow does not sit on a kisei. No such thing. A kisei, kisei Eliyahu, kisei Malchus, kisei Akavo. The word kisei is reserved exclusively for a person of dignity, authority. Oh, so exactly. No. That's exactly what it. We spend time on this. We gave a whole shir on this. That's one of my proofs. That is one of my greatest supports to this principle. What kind of thing is it to say that Chazal, you go into the lavatory in the restroom, and Chazal are known for their refinement, their sensitivity, and the term that's used for an outhouse, for a restroom is called the go to the Beis Hakisei?
Yeah, absolutely.
What kind of nonsense is that? That you're describing that's like a dirty, that's something if you could say, it just does not sit well in our minds. So the answer is, I have no suffix in my mind, maybe people tell me I'm totally wrong, but in my mind I have no doubt, when you say the Beis Hakisei, it's not referring to the total toilet. The fancy American standard, whatever you want to, it's not referring to the brand name. It's referring to the Kisei HaKavayit. Why would you call the base that room the Beis HaKisei? It is the room through which a person has an opportunity to make a bracha. In fact, the only bracha where you mention Hashem's Kisei HaKavayit. You have to think in religious terms. Life is all about opportunities. When a religious person looks at a restroom, Rav Shadran would call the room, you know what he would call the Beis HaKisei? The room without the mezuzah. When he would go and he would need to use the restroom, he would ask, where is there the room without the mezuzah? Isn't that a very interesting way of describing the Beis HaKisei? Okay, when you're a religious person and everything in your mind involves around religion, everything in life is about opportunities. When you come into the room, there's a mezuzah. When you go into this room, there's no mezuzah. Isn't that very depressing? You're losing the shmirah. You're losing the sanctity. It's a whole different world when you're a religious person. Okay, life is not an obstacle course. Life is opportunities. So the room without the mezuzah. Okay, there is no mezuzah. But guess what? There's even something even better. There's something even better. When you go into that room and you make use of that room, you now have an opportunity to make a bracha where you make mention of Hashem's Kisei HaKavod. Golui v'yodua lifnei Kisei Chivodecha. Now, why is that so? That's another topic, not for now. Okay, why we say Kisei in the Asher Yotza. But nevertheless, the reason why the room is called the Beis HaKisei is because it is the room which gives you an opportunity to make a bracha that mentions the Kisei HaKavod. Fine, so you can't make the bracha there, but the use, the function of this room is what gives you the opportunity to make that bracha. Now, how do you know that must be the pshat? Because there's no way in the world you can call the toilet a kisei. Because the word kisei is a word in Tanakh. You check it out. Go do a search. Very easy today. Do a search in Tanakh. The word kisei is a word that in Tanakh is only used in reference to a throne. A word, a chair, is called a moshav. A moshav and a mishkav. A moshav and a mishkav are the words in biblical Hebrew that are used to describe chairs. Moshav and mishkav. Kisei is a throne. The kisei shlomo, kisei hakavod. Here, the king of Nineveh, he's on the kisei. Vayoka mi kisoi. He got up from his throne. We are describing malchus. Malchus. Okay, you don't sit in the kisei. That's one of the tragedies. There are hundreds of examples of this in modern Hebrew. Modern Hebrew we won't spend time on this, the origin of modern Hebrew, and it's very tragic. There are a lot of very unpleasant things about modern Hebrew. Which, listen, we didn't. It wasn't our decision. It was introduced, developed by people who, Rahman al-Islam, did not have a Jewish, a religious upbringing, and it is what it is. There's nothing you can do about it, and you have no choice but to accept it. In fact, the Chazon Ish was one of the biggest advocates of teaching children Torah in modern Hebrew, not in Yiddish. That the Chazon Ish, he always talks about Rav Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik, how he's the one who gets, who he's the one who led had even by accident, but he's the one who is credited by many for starting a trend to teach Torah in America in English and not in Yiddish. Rav Yosher Ben Soloveitchik. What? There's nothing necessarily holy about it, but since it is the language that has been spoken by Jews for approximately 1,000 years, approximately 1,000 years,
they spoke Aramaic also for that. What's holy about it?
They have Judified it. They have created their own dialect. They have created. No, you're right. You're right. You are correct. You are correct. However, they have created. What has happened is they have created a dialect. A dialect
to communicate with everybody.
Which has a unique Yiddish flavor. Now, what's also very interesting is Rav David Cohen, he has I think, 4 volumes. Because it's been used for 1,000 years, he shows that expressions, right, it's nothing, you're right, there's nothing holy about it. But there are these, we know that Jews have enriched their own dialect of German. What is Yiddish? Yiddish is German, but it is a unique dialect of German that has been developed by Jews over 1,000 years.
Hebrew words, incorporated the local language.
And more than that, it's more than that. This is what Rav David Cohen is unique, and he shows in 4 volumes many expressions that are only found in Yiddish capture Mamorei Chazal. So he shows there are certain expressions, idioms. There are certain idioms that are in Yiddish, very popular idioms in Yiddish. He has 4 volumes on this. And he takes these idioms and he shows you a piece of Gemara. You never knew. He shows you a Targum. He shows you Mamorei Chazal. And he shows you that for 1,000 years, very clever, wise people were using German. They were speaking German, a Goyishal language. And because this was the language, their mother tongue, and they were speaking, they coined expressions which captured Mamorei Chazal, Divrei Torah, in very clever, in a collection of clever words. And because this continued for 1,000 years...
The Spartans also had their own language.
Correct! Rashi, let's go further. When Rashi quotes, Rashi continuously, you can't even find almost a whole daf in Shas, Rashi does not give you a French word, belaz. Now, what is that word? Let me clarify. When Rashi says it's this word, belaz, beloshen Ashkenaz, what is that word? It's very, Rabbi Schmidman explained this to me. He says, that wasn't Old French. There was no such, you go look at, go take out an old French dictionary. Guess what? You're not going to find half of those words that Rashi mentions. So what is it? He explained to me as follows. What Yiddish is to German is what Rashi's belaz is to French. In other words, this real old French, the real deal. Go take out, study people who study languages. This is the real, the goyim, they spoke French. They spoke the real deal. Jews, that's what they spoke. But they Judified it. How did they Judify it? They had their own conventions, their own need to enhance the language, to express themselves, to bring out Jewish concepts. So over a significant period of time, I don't know if it's 500 years, if it's 300 years, if it's less, Old French. How long, I don't know how long it was developed, how long were they in France for? They weren't in France more than 1,000 years until they were expelled. Okay, they weren't there, they couldn't have been in France more than 1,000 years, probably less. They lived in France for a very, very long time, and the native language was the mother language, whatever it was. But Jews took that language and they played with it. So when Rashi quotes to you Old French, he is not quoting for you a word that will be found in an encyclopedia of a record of an Old French dictionary. He's quoting you the Yiddish dialect of French. Likewise, what is Yiddish? German. But what happened over 1,000 years of Jews speaking German? They modified it and they created their own dialect. And you're right, it has no sanctity.
Third of it is a lot of Hebrew words.
Right. they exactly, exactly, exactly. So that's Belaz. Rashi says Belaz. Belaz is the French Yiddish. Loshoin Am Zor, the language of a stranger. Loshoin Am Zor is the language of a foreign nation. So Yiddish is also Am Zor. That's not Hebrew. It's not Aramaic. There are only two languages which have been which have validity in halacha. There is Lashon HaKodesh, of course, and to some degree Aramaic, whatever that means, whatever it means. Aramaic is a corrupted version of Hebrew. What? Well, they added in Yafel Kim Liefes, so there have been some a few Greek words, but as a language in its total, there's only Lashon Kodesh, holy language. Aramaic, whatever that means, it means. I don't know, whatever it means. We discussed this. Aramaic is a corrupted version, it's a watered down version. What language did Adam HaRishon speak? Machloikis. Some say he spoke Lashon HaKodesh, and some say he spoke in Aramaic, Aramis. Whatever that means, but there's no other language. He certainly did not speak Yiddish, okay? Even though there's a tradition that by Matan Torah, the Torah was given in Yiddish, okay? And anyone that tells you otherwise is not Bikodesh, okay? Even though we have that tradition, nevertheless, there are only two real languages, Lashon HaKodesh and Aramaic, which is not for now. When Rashi says Laz, Lashon Am Zor, he's referring to a dialect of French. Today Yiddish is not very popular anymore, but amongst us, Yiddish is a dialect of German, fine. And because it's been used for 1,000 years, it's become... It has taken a character of its own. But of course, it's not...
Ashkenaz.
Okay, fine. Laz stands for Lashon Am Zor. Now, going back...
According to Barrow Wine, the Yiddish came about as a language in the mid-1300s. I mean, he has a timeline. That's what he said.
Yiddish came about as an official language... Okay, that was an early form. There are many dialects of Yiddish also.
Yeah, well,
Hungarian Yiddish, Galiciana Yiddish. There are some Jews, some people who think they know Yiddish. You go into a neighbor in Williamsburg, you don't understand even one word they're saying. They don't even know. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the real deal. There are certain dialects of real heavy-duty a Hungarian Yiddish, and there's a German Yiddish, and there's a Polish Yiddish, and in each region itself there's a Russian Yiddish. Okay, there are many, many dialects of Yiddish itself. It's all a product of those. Now, just move ahead in modern history. Okay, Israel, the state of Israel, with all of the bracha that's brought to this world, which is undeniable, they've also brought about things which religious Jews are not happy with. And that one of those things is the language has abused the sacredness of the Torah. And one, the classic example is the word lahav. What is lav in modern Hebrew?
Lahav.
Not lav, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. Chashmal, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. Chashmal. I'm sorry. Electricity. Chashmal. It's in the dictionary. It's in... What? So how is it used exactly what I'm trying to bring out? How is it used? We discussed with Lon Yecheskel. How is the word chashmal used? Rabbi Yisrael, please. How is chashmal used in Yecheskel? In the most esoteric, mystical description of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It is something which is beyond definition. It represents the ultimate sanctity of description of HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
It's an unnatural kind of...
HaKadosh Baruch Hu is this chashmal. The Malachim are described as a chashmal. So for modern Hebrew to take that word, which is a description of the sacredness, the mystique of the Shekhinah, and to bring it down and use it for a word...
In a secular way
of electricity is disgraceful. Is a disgrace for the sacredness of Lashon HaKodesh. There's no doubt. Yeah, you disagree with that, Dr. Fruchter?
So Ben Eliezer, the
Hebrew language.
That's modern Hebrew. 100%. It is what it is. Live with it. We don't have a choice. It doesn't make a problem. We don't have a choice. This is the world of reality. The world of reality is if you're an Israeli citizen, you live in Eretz Yisrael, and the electricity is not working, you call the electrician and you tell him the chashmal is not working. This is the reality of the way we live today. There's nothing to discuss. Zehu, it's a done deal. It's over. Done. We've been there. We're finished. However, when you step back as an Orthodox Jew and you learn Tanakh and you have emunah that the words of Tanakh are holy words, so if you were the one today, if the word electricity did not exist and you were the one on a committee to decide to create a language, a new modern language, and to select a word to describe a new technology, a new phenomenon that did not exist until now, and to coin it, to give it a word, an Orthodox religious Jew would never ever take the word chashmal and apply it to electricity. Now today you don't have a choice. Today, even the most Orthodox, no matter how religious you are, you will use the word chashmal to describe electricity. Because that's the way it is. That's the world we live in. But in thinking about how it came about, if you are a maimon and you read Sefer Yecheskel and you see how the word chashmal is used and you study the commentaries and you see how they struggle to define, we learned that, we spent a lot of time on this, on the word chashmal, it's not a proper thing to take the word chashmal and use it to describe something in this world mundane of electricity. But that's the way it is. Too bad for you. What? What? No, that's different. No. That's different. That, you should know something. You want to know something? You want to know something? You just said Moshe. In the Gemara, there is no person ever called Moshe. In the entire Talmud Bavli, and the commentators pick up on that, they say because no one until modern times would dare call their child Moshe. No one would dare have the chutzpah, to call their child Moshe, to say, oh, their child is Moshe. Okay, would a person call the child today Mashiach? Would a person, people do it. People do it. Okay, but would you? I think a lot of people would think twice before calling their child Mashiach. Okay, there's a certain sensitivity. Let me ask you, are you going to go call Yudke Vavke, right? Okay, is it already that? Moshe ben Maimon. Moshe ben Maimon, the Rambam. Mi Moshe v'yad Moshe lekom k'Moshe. When did the Rambam live? The Rambam was a Rishon. The Rambam lived 800 years ago. Okay, we're talking about the Gemara. We're talking about what happened. What happened for the first from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. All the way until then, there were how many? 2,500 years. We don't find any Moshe. Obviously, things have been diluted as time goes on. Okay, I think you could appreciate. Look, when you put the Yudke Vavke, are you going to label something Yudke Vavke? Are you going to? Why not? It's modern Hebrew. I'm not. When I learn the Torah, Yudke Vavke is Hashem's name. When I go to work, so we call this Yudke Vavke. Am I saying something that's so bizarre? You know, there's certain sensitivities that you have. We didn't make the language, it's none of our business. Here is another tragic example. The word kisei in Tanakh is used exclusively to refer to a throne, malchus. In modern Hebrew, the word kisei means a chair. Biblical Hebrew, there is no such word. The word kisei, a chair, is a moshav. A moshav or a mishkav. There is no word. Kisei is a throne. Modern Hebrew is modern. So we're all confused. So we go today to the Beis HaKisei. So what does it mean in modern Hebrew? We go to the room where there is a chair. It's a little rough on the edges to say that. Because we forgot that the word kisei in biblical Hebrew does not mean a chair. The word kise in Biblical Hebrew means a throne. And the reason why the room is called the Beis HaKise is because this is the room which enables you to make a blessing, which you mention, Golui v'yodua lifnei chisei chivodecha. You can't tell me that this term has been used already in Chazal. More reason that the people who invented this term, they were so rough. They were so to say, oh, it's the Beis HaKise. It's not the way a refined person speaks. Can't be. It just can't be. It's not. It can't be. It's the word kise means malchus, and here you see it clearly. He removed his cloak, his royal garment. And then when he said, Vayichasak, now, this pasuk is a very important pasuk because this pasuk is one of the sources, one of the ideas. Here, everybody said, please, we need some decorum. Do you make a bracha when you see the President of the United States? Okay? In England? Okay, so it's Chiluke Deos. A lot of opinions. Why not? What is the definition of malchus? So some want to say the power of life and death. Okay? So does the president recognize the power of life and death? To some degree, yes. He can commute, can pardon, and he can put someone in harm's way. He can draft people. He can send an army into war, which will lead to their...
Technically, he can't without the approval of Congress.
Okay, but he can initiate the process. Okay, but he can initiate... Kiraboisai, he affects people's lives. Okay, but the president does have a lot of power over people's lives. There is no question about that. So for many poskim, that's enough. It's enough. You see the president, you make a bracha, Uchei Malchus, Baruch Atah Hashem, Lekeinim Melech Olam, Shecholak, Mechvoidoi, Lebosar Vadam. Shenosan, Mechvoidoi, Lebosar Vadam. Okay, you can make a bracha. Other poskim say no, it's not enough. Some will argue that part of Malchus means dignity. It means there is a certain awe and respect. And then a wise man, you would say that they would say, it's not even a joke, they would say that until Nixon, this scandal, Watergate scandal, those who lived before Nixon will tell you there was a certain derech eretz that was expressed towards the President of the United States.
Absolutely.
From Nixon, ulamata, things took a turn. Okay? Others, you look in this farm, some say other incredible chidushim, that in order for you to be called the melech, you have to have your own, the king, would speak in his palace their own language. Could you imagine this? That the language that was spoken in the palace was a different language than was spoken in the street.
Twitter.
Different language.
Like the king was saying, people when they speak the same,
okay, in Echanami. The language, there is an element of Malchus demands that the king, Malchus, has its own unique language. That's what I say is Chochmas Yevonis. Chochmas Yevonis was a special language. Doesn't mean a philosophy, Greek philosophy. It means they had a unique language. It was the language of Malchus. Okay, Chochmas Yevon, they had the hierarchy, the aristocracy, had its own language. If the Malchus doesn't have a special language, there's a deficiency in the Malchus. Next opinion, and this is where it comes in over here. Others learn, Malchus means the king has to wear special garments. If the king wears the same garments as the common citizen in the country, there's something lacking in his Malchus. This is a condition of Malchus. In this pasuk it says, and when there's another condition, Mikisoi. Does the Melech have a throne? Are you going to argue that the Oval Office is the Kisei Shel Malchus? I would say yes. I think you can make that argument. You can make an argument that the President of the United States has a Kisei. What is the Kisei? The Kisei Shel Malchus of the United States is the Oval Office. In America, I mean, the Oval Office is Kodesh Kodashim, right? It's a sacred place. The Kodesh HaKodesh is the Oval Office. If you go and let's say you have a real hip president, and he's going to say, you know, in America we all work at home. I'm shutting down the Oval Office. I'm gonna conduct my affairs from my bedroom. Right? Right? A hip, right? You have a new prayer. Don't worry, the day will come. The day will come yet, right? I want to show America. We'll save on transportation. We don't need to have traffic. Everyone has to go into Manhattan. Everyone should work at home. Today, it's very popular today. Today, I don't know if you know what's going on. Today, it's very common that people work at least one day at home, which basically means they don't work. Okay? They're just going shopping. They make believe they're home. Right? They're on. Okay, so I want to be hip. I want to send a message to the country, everyone to work at home.
Ever have to talk to another person?
So I'm not going to work. So that's a deficiency in Malchus. Malchus, in the eyes of Chazal, demand a kisei. There's something about a kisei. Shlomo HaMelech wasn't for nothing that Shlomo HaMelech invested enormous resources to build for himself this magnificent kisei Shlomo, which was the whole world was jealous of Shlomo HaMelech because of his exalted throne. And Achashverosh tried to copy it. Achashverosh first actually got a hold of it. And it was Sakonis Nefashos. I mean, it was booby-trapped. If you sit down in the kisei of Shlomo and you're not fit, a person would be killed instantly. Shlomo Lechem, a person would die. So he couldn't, he was afraid. So what did he do? He built a replica. And then what happened? Where was the factory? Amazon had their factory where? In Shushan. Okay, that was where the factory was to build it. And then when they finished it, they discovered it's just too big to transport. Well, so says the Chazal. They couldn't bring it. It was just too complicated to transport. So they decided, instead of transporting the kisei to, what was the place? What was the main capital? I forgot the name, main capital, one of the famous cities in Persia.
No, that's where they moved it.
So they decide, you know what? Let's relocate. The capital will now be where the throne is, and we'll build the capital around the throne. At Kidekach, they relocated the capital of the country to Shushan, because that's where the Kisei Malchus was located. Okay, in this pasuk it says he wore an adartoi. Part of Malchus means you wear special clothing. A special robe, a special whatever you be the Malchus. It's not for nothing. We laugh at it. Okay, we laugh. The President of the United States wears the same suit. I remember I told you so many times. Michelle Obama. She once said about Obama. Says she was reflecting upon the 8 years in office. So she said that she went to many dinners, state dinners, affairs. She said she wore hundreds of dresses throughout the 8 years in office. Her husband, Barack, he wore the same tuxedo for 8 years. He didn't gain any weight. Pretty good. He wore the same tuxedo for all 8 years. It's amazing. Okay? Same tuxedo.
No, same jeans.
Okay, so tuxedo. Even the dead are wearing tuxedos. Okay? So what's the big deal? Okay, so is that called an adartoi? That's not called an adartoi. So, the Malchus of America, like I told you, that was a discussion. There are many different opinions on this matter. There are many poskim that say it's Malchus is Malchus. Finished. You make a bracha, b'shem, Malchus. They just had in the news when Trump went to England to greet the Queen, they showed this video of these Hasidim, they were waiting to see him, and they made the bracha B'shem u'malchus. Kol hakavod. I know firsthand a person part of the upper echelon of the OU. They met with Bush W a number of years ago, and there was a big debate among the poskim in the OU when they greet the president, should they make the bracha B'shem u'malchus? And the psak halacha was no. The psak halacha was to say the bracha beloy Shame Umalchus. That was whatever it was. Okay? To each his own. None of my business.
I don't remember that they made a brach Shame
Malchus.
But they made a
brach. I think my mother told me they made a brach. My mother told me, remembers when I don't know which president, they took them in school. She remembers they took him out. The president was a whole motorcade. I think they taught them to make the brach. To each his own. But in the discussion of what is the definition of Malchus, there are many factors. The most basic is the power of life and death. Another element is dignity. Another element is what we learned in this pasuk. The word kisoi, kiso does not mean a chair. Kiso means a throne. Does a melech have a throne? What is a throne in modern times? Is there a throne? That's a definition of malchus. If the melech does not have a kisei, does that indicate there's something lacking in the malchus? Does that mean you can't make the bracha? Who's to say? Another element about malchus is what it says in this pasuk, adartoi. A melech wears unique clothing. I was always intrigued by Rav Avadya Yosef, Zechet Tzadik Levracha. I always thought he was so cool. He was so cool in that, in the robes, the Sephardic robes with the black sunglasses. Always intrigued me. And it also intrigued him, but Sof Yomov, this really, really, really got him excited. They write about this, is that one year, it wasn't that long before he died. It never happened before. It was Purim, and all of these boys came, little boys, were dressed up like Rav Avadya Yosef on Purim costume. The Purim costume was Rav Avadya Yosef. And they came with a replica and exactly what he wore, with the same hat, with the dark glasses, and they came to him, and he looks at them, and he was like, "Who are you?" And it became a craze. Ad kdei kach then, and in Ar Yitzchak, they one of the Russian yeshivas, he always gets just the costume. He's very tall, very big. He came, that was the best guy ever. He has a magnificent costume. The best costume he ever came was, he came in and dressed up in Rav Avadya Yosef. Yeah. He wore his work clothes. He took a regular jacket, right? Right. The reason why he wore the glasses was because... Okay, you're right. Okay, I hear what you say. To dress so that Avadi Yosef. I hear what you're saying. If you're correct, it's correct. I'm not going to argue. He almost was blind. Rav Avadya Yosef at one point in his life nearly became blind. And he went to be mispalil by a certain kevin. He went to someone to be, he attributes his that his eyesight was restored to a certain gadol. He went to be mispalil by a certain kever. It's written up the story. You're right. You're right. If it's not respectful, then it's not respectful. There are boys, there are little boys, one of the popular costumes in Purim for little boys, they get dressed up like a Sefer Torah. And like an Achnas Sefer Torah. It's very common you see boys wearing kapotas on Purim. Is it going too far to get dressed up like Rav Avadya Yosef? Could be it is. One thing I tell you for sure, don't do. I thought it was disgusting. Don't get dressed up like the Pope. I saw it in shul, and the people in the shul, they wanted to throw him out. They really came to mincha. He came to mincha wearing mamish, the garments.
How about shachris?
Bidiyuk, mamish. He was wearing the mamish, the costume of the Pope. They didn't throw him out, but they let him know that you've really crossed the red line.
You've crossed
what? Alright, let's finish up over here. Okay, you have to appreciate what it says here. At least we learned this part by Yiga. It says kis'o in Tanakh means a throne. Unfortunately, in modern Hebrew, it's abused to mean a chair. And that's why we get confused, but when the word kisei appears in Tanakh, you have to stop. Take a deep breath. We're dealing here with the honor of Malchus. The Malchus of Nineveh. Ashur, at this point in time in history, was the world power. It was the superpower of the world. This was the dominant. Nothing happened in this world without the king of Ashur giving his approval or disapproval. This was the world. So when it says that he got off from his kiso, this is the Malchusa da'ara. This Malchusa da'ara ke'ei Malchusa d'rakia. It's a very significant expression. And unfortunately, because we are brainwashed, the word kise just means an ordinary bench, ordinary chair, it loses its weight when we read the pasuk to appreciate that the king, the superpower of the world, when he got up off his throne and he took off his royal garments and he got dressed in sackcloth and sat down on the ash, this made the news. This had massive ramifications for the world. Yeah. To go first. Excellent question. Why wasn't he the first? The people. There was a grassroots movement. Well, why not? Democracy. I mean, I don't know that democracy. Why not?
The story of Yonah preceded it.
Well, every citizen needs to ask permission from the king before they can eat some green beans. The people can do what they want. Even though there was a king, it's not a democracy, but people have a degree of freedom. Yonah is passing through the country. It takes 3 days to get from end to end. Where is the king? I don't know. It doesn't say. We have a little, so maybe we'll see more in the Mefarshim. I don't recall. But the king is somewhere in the middle of the country. Yonah has passed through a third of the country. And by passing through a third, the people that he came in contact with on their own, they listened, and they amongst themselves, the people, the common man, called for fasting. Then it seems, at some point in time, in the middle of these 3 days, the Pasuk says, Vayiga, what people are doing out there in society reached the king. He found out. And what are they doing? What's the reason? So the king said, it's a great idea. Why should only a couple of sections? Let everyone do this. Let everyone follow my example. He made it official. Okay, there are many things like that. You have days which are in this country that are celebrated. Mother's Day. Is Mother's Day an official holiday in the laws? I don't know. I don't remember. I once looked this up. A lot of things. They start off. It's a common man's movement. And if it picks up enough steam, they legislate in Congress that it should be official and there should be a nafkamina. There's no, the alternate side is suspended. At least that, right? Or they don't collect the garbage, whatever. There are some benefits that come along with it being legislated into law. Okay, so it's, you're right. What how did that? Now, also, there's another curious point, which we have to, and that is, what does it mean over here? Vayiga. Vayiga does not appear to be the correct word. Vayiga literally means to touch. It would say vayishma. The pasuk should say that the report, or he saw, he went out into the street, he saw people sitting on the floor in sackcloth, or he listened, it came to his ears a report. The word vayiga literally means it touched, it reached, it touched. It's not the right word to describe that what was happening in society came into the ears of the king. Why is it here? So that requires, that is a little bit of an insight into what, to answer your question, what exactly is going on. Let's finish up the mitzvahs. We have to be very late. So here we finish up the pasuk divav, we finished. Pasuk zayin in the mitzvahs, then we'll stop. It's very, very short. Vayazek, he cried out. It's also a very interesting word. It's not the word we would expect. It says, Vayazek tziva, he gave a command, lahachriz, bikol ze'aka, a crying voice, lemar, me'atzas hamelech, me'atzas gedele hamalchus, through the council of the king, and through the council of the great ones of the malchus, nigzar, lemar, following, ha'adam ha'behema v'chulu, v'avur, agmas nefesh, tzivui, limnoya, machol, me'behema, sliman, yikona, lev, ho'anoshim. Okay, so why can't the animals eat? Why? What did the animals do? Why do we deny food from the animals? By the animals not eating, is that going to make a difference? Are the animals creatures which have understanding of what it means to do teshuva, of what it means to pray to Hashem? So the Mitzudos David says, absolutely not. It was just a technique that if you walk in the street and you see the animal is depressed, you'll get depressed. It will be contagious. If you see the animal is in sire, it has an effect. It's a visual effect. He was a marketer. Okay, the king of Asher has a background in marketing, and he knows the koyach of visual presentation. If the animals are in this matzav, it rubs off. Al yiru musav al behemoth. Where yiru goes only referring to the animals. Okay, there's obviously a lot more to discuss. And Mir Tzem talks about children. There's a halacha when it comes to rachmanim instead of a child. A child is an ovel, right? Let's say we have is an ovel. So are you allowed to give the child a haircut? Why not? Child's not shaykh in avelus. He's too young for this. Yet in Shulchan Aruch it says you don't. If a child is in a state, he loses a parent, you're not supposed to cut his hair. Let the hair be long. Why? So when the adults look at the child, they should get depressed. They should do teshuva. The kid is not shaykh in this. The kid, there's no reason in the world why the child can't have a haircut. He's not a bardas to understand what's going on. But in order that when the adults come to the family, it should hit them. The severity, the tragedy, and they should do something about it. The child should be a prop, should be some type of a visual effect. Exactly the same thing as over here when it comes to the behemoth.
Same thing where a child puts on tefillin a year earlier when he's a
yosef. Oh, so you just touched upon a very controversial thing. Very, very good. You said over here, Mr. Weiss said this very interesting thing, that there's a minog. We learned this in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Kid Shulchan Aruch, it says something very, very bizarre, that a yosaim, a child who does not have a father or a mother, only a father, Kid Shulchan Aruch, puts on tefillin when he's 12 years old. Now, most children put on tefillin when they are a month before, 3 months before, a day before, 3 days before, bo bayom. No one's putting on tefillin more than 3 months. I never heard that, more than 3 months. Okay, most people today, they put on approximately a month. If the tefillin are ready, if they get it from the cipher, a month before. In Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, it says a yosam puts on tefillin when he's 12 years old. I've personally never seen this today.
Yeah,
and you saw this? Put on tefillin. So we asked around. So some people over here mentioned, Mr. Glatter told me also, he remembers. Why? Where does it say to what's the reason for this? So Mr. Weiss just said a very interesting reason, Mishum Agmas Nefesh. People should look at this child and should ask, why is he wearing tefillin? He's only 12 years old. The bar mitzvah is not yet for a year. Agmas Nefesh, not even for us. For us to realize this, the tragedy. It's a tragedy that a child. I recently came across an incredible sefer, where it's a Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael, where people present them very questions, and they research the questions, very tough questions, very difficult questions, and they thoroughly research. They have tools to research, and they give incredible answers, and they have a whole book of all the questions and the answers. Really, really incredible stuff. And one of the things I saw there was this question: what's the makar? And today we don't see being done anymore. Today you don't see this. What's the makar? Why it used to be that a yosam puts on tefillin when he's 12 years old? So it doesn't give the answer of Mr. Weiss. Mr. Weiss gave a very beautiful answer. It gives a different answer. You're not going to believe this answer, what they found. Because there's only one person in the world that is believed to testify how old a child is. The father. How do you know a child is 13 years old? What, you trust a birth certificate? Yeah? Go ask Obama. You trust the birth certificate? How do you really know how old a child is? You don't. The only one that is neman to tell you my child is 13 years old is one person, a father. If this child doesn't have a father, we don't know how old he is. Who says he tells you the bar mitzvah is next year? How do we know? We don't. Because we do not know, we have to start putting tefillin on him a year earlier than what he says. Because we really don't know. That's what it says. This Beis Din has found. They've found a very.
What about the mother?
Mother's not Neman. She's not Neman. The mother is not Neman. Now I guess that explains why today. That's why today, maybe that's why we don't do this anymore. You've not seen this today anymore. We don't see this anymore. Rahman Litzlan, we don't see this. I guess because today we do know. Today there are enough authentic records. We live in a society where we know that's why today it's fallen into disuse, this principle. Years ago, talking people, even adults did not know how old they were. Okay, no one, Chavetz Chaim, no one really knows, they say, no one really knows how old he was. No one really, they say, how old was he when he was Nifter? They say, whatever they say, the truth is, no one really knows how old he was. In fact, when he got older, they used to make a birthday party for the Chavetz Chaim every year on his birthday, and every year he got younger. Ayin Hara. Last year he was 95, this year he's 94, and the next he was 93, and he was 90, really? They really did that. Every year he got younger. They were afraid of Ayin Hara. So he got younger every year. And the truth was, they know that he himself did not know how old he was. Okay, take a very short break.